And unfortunately, in church culture, I would say, we kind of just default to, well, just stand up, be a man. Mm-hmm. Well, but what does that mean? Like, specifically, right. What's a beautiful, specific vision?
Well, that's Brant Hansen. He's our guest today on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. He's going to help us understand God's great plan for young men and how important they are for us as a society and culture. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fuller.
John, it seems today that so many young men are aimlessly wandering, maybe through gaming or literally just wandering through the streets. You know, what to do? What do we do? It's an epidemic, and it is a sense of purposelessness. Mm-hmm. And I think today we're going to hit this topic with a great guest who's written a wonderful book, The Young Men We Need. And, you know, with a father of two young men, I'm really interested in what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I'm leaning in as well. And Brant Hansen is a syndicated radio host on more than 200 radio stations. He's the author of a number of books. And as you said, Jim, the one that's going to form the foundation for our conversation today, The Young Men We Need, God's Purpose for Every Guy and How You Can Live It Out. And stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast for all the details about Brant and the book.
Brant, welcome back to Focus. It's good
thank
to have you.
I'm always honored to talk to you guys.
It's always fun to see you.
Thanks.
And, you know, I love your writing style, and it's just, it's real fresh, and it's raw, and it's right out there, and you do a great job articulating ideas.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I try to write in a funny way, but that's always in the eye of the beholder, too.
Like, yeah, that's the truth.
What may be funny to me may not, but sometimes it works.
Let's start with the scripture. We're focused on the family. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's our core, is our commitment to Christ, and we think everything is built upon that, the family, everything. Mm-hmm. But you look at Psalm 119:9, it says, how can a young man keep his way pure? By guarding it according to your word. Mm-hmm. That's it, isn't it?
It is. And but guys aren't told who they're supposed to be.
Hmm.
They're not.
What do they hear in the culture? What are they supposed to be with air quotes?
Well, that's just it. There's no actual vision for it, but the larger culture has no clue and won't articulate any sort of specific thing about masculinity. We know that. But the other thing that even a lot of Christian guys are going to is Andrew Tate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you don't know much about him, like, he's the just epitome of selfishness, using women. It's exactly the opposite of what we would want to say. But literally in Christian schools, a lot of guys are bending towards that, and they idolize him.
Why do you think that is? I mean, it's an interesting inverse reaction to what we would hope for, obviously. But what's creating that appetite in young men to go so kind of core and baseless?
They want to know who they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he's giving them a vision. And in the absence of a better vision, it's something. I mean, guys want to know, like, what is my mission? Like, who am I? And some of them will openly say that. Like, I'm following him because no one else is showing me any model. And unfortunately, in church culture, I would say, we kind of just default to, well, just stand up, be a man. Mm-hmm. Well, but what does that mean? Like, specifically, right. What's a beautiful, specific vision?
Let me ask you this, too, though. I mean, in that regard, we hear a lot about the feminization of the church, you know, that men don't feel comfortable so much going to church and the way that it's structured. And
yeah.
It's kind of like school. You got to sit still and listen. And that's not something we typically do well, even as adult males.
Right. It doesn't resonate with a lot of young guys. And this is one of the things I write about, and I think it's great news. I talk about your spiritual life. What does it actually look like? Because guys will a lot of times think that God has abandoned them, or maybe he's not real because they don't feel him. Like, we're supposed to feel feelings. I mean, we're like, our whole culture is based on emotions, but that seeps into church culture too.
And that's not bad. I mean,
emotion
is a good thing.
No, but for a lot of guys, and for some women too, it might be more analytical. If they're not feeling it, you feel like you must not be spiritual.
Mm.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Like, I must not, everybody else is feeling something. A lot of young guys don't get it. It doesn't click for them. They're not having that same experience in a worship service, and it's not their fault. It's just that real spirituality, what I'm trying to tell young guys, and they can get this, like, it's not emotion, it's loyalty.
Mm.
That's what God is looking for.
And that's why an Andrew Tate is actually taking, because, or a Joe Rogan, or
sure,
you know, people that are speaking forcefully into male culture, about being male.
Yeah, just here's a vision. They're giving it. I think it's a horrible one. It's one that it's one that betrays what our real role is, what I try to sketch out in this book. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole point of the book, is like, what is this specific vision that I can shoot for? And yeah, it's a beautiful one. Like, it's that people around you will benefit from this. You don't benefit from the Andrew Tate model. The people around you suffer.
Yeah, men have a fork in the road. Either you're a taker or a giver. And how do you figure out which is what you want to be? And of course, the Word of God is about being selfless and giving of all kinds of things, talent, treasure, time,
so
family.
So the vision I'm trying to sketch out is the idea of what Adam was given to do. He's a keeper of the garden. That's what he was supposed to do. He actually didn't defend the garden against the enemy that was in it.
Huh.
He failed. But that was his job. And it means creating a space where the vulnerable can thrive. Mm-hmm. It means protecting people around you. It means, like, if you have a garden, there's species that are vulnerable that can't grow in the wild. But because you're there, they get to bloom and flourish. Like, that. Everybody's got a garden. And this is your job. Your sphere of influence is the people around you get to thrive because you're there, and they're protected because you're there. They're more secure, not less secure. See, around Andrew Tate, you're less secure. But around a keeper of the garden, the people around you are more secure because you're there. And to the extent that you make them aware of that, they become aware that you're a point of security. They're drawn to you.
Yeah, and that's the big goal, and we'll unpack that a little bit more. Let's start with toxic masculinity and what that means. I don't know that many men understand what that means. Well, somehow I'm toxic.
Well, I think it's thrown around, and that's the problem. It's like this one-size-fits-all thing. No one really knows exactly what it means, but I think there can be toxic masculinity to the extent that if you're trying to be intimidating to innocent people, to vulnerable people.
Yeah, the bully thing.
Yeah, you make them insecure.
Yeah.
You make people feel insecure around you versus secure. At the deepest level, that's what that is, I think. Conversely, there are counselor friends of mine who say they see more toxic masculinity in terms of what they call toxic passivity, where people feel insecure around a dad or a husband because they are afraid he won't show up, and he doesn't. He just has checked out.
Yeah.
So it's actually still toxic, and it still makes people feel insecure, but it's different.
I think that's a difficult one, because I think men, when we feel under pressure, you know, in your marriage or work perhaps, we tend to back up. You know, it's just one of our almost like instincts is to get quiet, back up. Let's keep the peace. We don't want to rock the boat, however you want to describe that. And that's not healthy.
No, and that phrasing that they put on there of the toxic passivity helped me.
Yeah.
That's true. I don't want to check out like that. Like, my wife needs to know that I'm engaged. And if she suspects I'm not, or that I wouldn't rise to the occasion, or if I'm too quiet, that I make her wonder, does he really love me? That's a problem.
Well, and then, you know, again, therapists will start telling you that when you quiet down and you shut down, your wife's going to start prodding you on purpose to get some kind of response.
Yeah.
Because you're just so passive.
Yeah.
And so that's not healthy.
No, that's a vicious cycle. But one of the things that struck me, I was reading another book, and a guy said, I can become the threat to my wife with my words. Like, you can pat yourself on the back, like, I'd defend against an intruder if he came in. But he said, most of the time I'm the intruder. It's my lack of words or my sarcasm. When I do talk, I cut her down. I'm the problem,
wow,
he said.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to that. But on both of those ends, the problem is you're making people around you less secure.
Yeah.
But if you exude security and your wife doesn't have to worry about it. I tell young guys this, like, if you get married, your wife's going to want you to be a focus of security, a provider of security. And if you're not, she's going to resent you. But if you are, she's going to find you wildly attractive. It's really true.
There's a secret.
Yeah. I mean, that's a way to get guys' attention, but it's not the reason to fulfill this keeper of the garden idea. But if I'm talking to young guys, like, do you understand women will find you more attractive if you're a source of security, and they see you that way, like, just so you know, because they deeply know deep down, this is what you're for.
Yeah, and it's a core need
yeah.
for everybody, actually. So the question becomes, the golden question here, halfway in, a third of the way in. How can a young man take initiative to be keepers and protectors in their respective gardens?
Yeah, the thing I start with is that thing I said about the spiritual life. Like, first of all, God is looking for loyalty. So you just keep showing up and talking with him. I'm telling guys, he wants to partner with you in life. He's always been looking for partners. Abraham, Adam and Eve, like, he's looking to partner with you. So you just keep talking to him. You keep showing up. Even if you sin and you are a sinner, you still show up. You don't slink away in shame.
What does it mean to partner? I mean, sometimes we can overcomplicate that. Mm. I think God, the older I get, the more I realize the simpler it is. Yeah. And we can overcomplicate that. That means do I need to form an LLC with God? And do I talk to my accountant about that? I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
But I mean, why do we make it so difficult to wake up every morning and say, come Holy Spirit, let's go to work today.
Right. And talk to God about what's on your mind, what you're doing in life together. Dallas Willard said that's the definition of prayer, is you and God talking about what you're doing in life together. Hmm. Well, I can do that. I can keep showing up. And over time, what happens as you continue that, you change. You become a different sort of person. So I would start with that. There's a lot of things I unpack in the book about seeking wisdom, how to do that, the importance of rejecting fake stuff, which is a real problem, as you know. But if you're not, you can fall into these traps. One thing I tell them is your schedule determines a lot of the temptations that you face.
Hmm.
So you can be really discouraged spiritually. Like, I'm such a failure. I keep falling into this. Yeah, man, you need to have more stuff on your schedule. It's true. Yeah.
Like, boredom isn't good.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're left with your computer in your house for two.
Right.
Like, it really, at times it's just changing your calendar.
Yeah.
That can take care of this. I used an example of the kids. I was a youth leader. Took them on a missions trip to build a house. These were guys I was discipling, so we were pretty close. We could talk about stuff. And they always struggle with lust. That was always a big topic. Always, you know, always. And we did this week-long project, and it was with a co-ed group. And at the end of the week, this was in the desert in Mexico, I said, have you guys struggled a lot with lust this week? And they were like, I hadn't even thought about it. They're like, no, we've been too busy. Like, we're building the house. We're coming back. It's hot out. Like, we're busy morning till night. And they laughed about it. We've been laughing. We've been having a great time. We've been doing something important. Funny how it doesn't become, like, sometimes those issues leave when you can alter your schedule a little bit.
No, that's so true. What's your message to guys about why it's important to protect the vulnerable? I mean, I think it's in our heart to do that as men. But you're right. The messages today are all over the map. We don't know what we're supposed to be.
Right.
Women are more assertive. And, you know, a lot of people think that's very good. More women are in master's programs, more women in college. Fewer men are going to those programs now. So when you look, the message for young men in their 20s, let's say, it's kind of difficult to figure out, what am I supposed to be?
Exactly. I just read an article in Vox, which is like a progressive.
Right.
And they were having the same conversation. Like, who in the world are guys supposed to be? We don't have a model for that.
So you talk about protecting the vulnerable. That's like old fashioned.
Yeah. But it's what you're made for. And little boys will understand that. Huh. Little kids, if you tell like little kids, stop picking on your sister, you're supposed to be her defender. But you're betraying your role.
Yeah.
That clicks because we're made for this. And even in that article, they said that men are really good protectors and providers when they're at their best. Like, yeah, imagine. And when that clicks with a kid, a guy, at least you have the picture. Even if you don't fulfill it, they can go, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Brent, I want to come back to what you talked about, isolation, because I think, A, we didn't spend enough time on that because it's a well of difficulty. Mm-hmm. You also combine that isolation with something you phrase sexual supernormal stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
Describe what that is and how that traps us.
Yeah, it's so wild. I'll talk to guys about this. Like, so in nature, there's a Dutch guy, I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter. Von something. And he did this study with male stickleback fish, which I don't know what those are, but like, apparently they'll attack these other kinds of fish. And they have red markings when the fishes that they attack. He's like, what if I enhance those red markings? What would happen? They went wild and attacked like crazy. just by seeing this red. He did it with butterflies, where he created this fake butterfly and used vivid colors, even more than a butterfly. And it didn't really look like a butterfly, but looked just enough that males were driven wild and they kept trying to mate with this fake little thing that he made that's so colorful. And this occurs in nature all the time if you want to do these experiments. But the thing was, there were real female butterflies right there available. And they ignored the female butterflies. And they went for this fake, super out of this world, like accentuated, exaggerated fake. Well, that's tragic. But that's what we do. That's what our culture is set up to do.
It's terrible.
It is. But that's something that once I think a young guy starts to figure out, like, wait, I'm being sold a bill of goods here. This isn't a real woman. This is pixels. This is right. This is an image. It's not a real person. And I'm not having a real relationship. But that's the trick. It's like, that's the supernormal stimulation. Now you can't relate to a real woman. It's a total deceit.
And it's also the integrity you were talking about. What's the integrity of that ethic, that sexual ethic?
Right.
To go for something false? Or to go for something God created in terms of it being real.
Which is literally like life-giving.
Right.
Literally life-giving.
Yeah.
And will help you grow up and be the man that you wanted to be. Like that image will never do that. It's never going to call you out on things you need to improve in.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. So it's a sucker punch. You're being given this, you know, like, hey, look over here, and you find out you've missed your life.
You know, one kernels of feedback, I'll put it that way, that we will receive is, you know, parents perhaps of adult children in their 20s that made a decision to live with their girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, and it's always the phrase, you know, we want to get married. We just want to kind of test it out to make sure we're compatible. You had somebody call you, I think, and ask that very, or make that very same statement. What did you suggest to them in terms of their situation?
On my radio show, I asked him, this happens quite a bit because it's such a common thing.
It's very common today.
And I asked, why are you going to get married? Oh, yeah, we're getting married. We're going to eventually get married. Well, what are you waiting for? Well, you know, we're financially, we have a 2-year-old together. Okay, so you have a son with her.
Right.
Yeah. So you're having sex with your, obviously, your body is saying we are one, but you don't have the guts to actually walk that out. Spiritually, like, why not just say to her and your son, you're safe with me for the rest of my life?
Something like your body's writing checks that your soul won't cash.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. I think I stole that from Tim Keller, who got it from somebody else. But it's so brilliant because it's like, why is this lack of integrity that your body is doing something that you're not backing up spiritually?
Right.
Like you're withholding yourself. But you're offering your body. Well, that's literally disintegration. It's disintegrity.
Right.
You want all of these things in line with each other so that you become who you could have been and should be, like an integrated person.
You know, it's interesting because I don't think we understand the depth of integrity and what that actually means. You know, one of the things I've tried to teach my boys in the dating situations, you know, you have got to remember that girl you're dating most likely will not be your wife. And you need to respect her in that regard because she's somebody else's future wife.
Right.
So you need to respect her body in such a way as a Christian that you're not doing things you shouldn't do.
She should be safe with you. Your girlfriend, your sister, your whoever. Like, when you're taking advantage of her for your own thrill, that's a betrayal of your role. You're now the threat in the garden.
So how do we get young men to be ambitious toward the right things? I mean, if we're so clouded as a Christian culture within this bigger clouded culture, how do we lay out the breadcrumbs for younger men as dads, as mentors? How do we help them? How do we help ourselves, first of all, to know we're leading in a direction that's right and positive?
You know, I'm usually a guy who's like, well, there's, you know, I don't know, or maybe let's look at this and that. And in this case, I don't think it's complex. I really don't.
Didn't you have a friend with a sports car that kind of illustrated this?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I talk a lot about contentment in the book, too, about having the audacity to say, look, there's stuff in life that's really awesome and beautiful, and I don't have to own it. That's a beautiful woman. I don't have to own her. That's a beautiful car. That's cool. I don't have to own it. But I've learned that from friends that have gotten stuff. Within a week, my friend got a sports car. It was super hot. And I was like, that's amazing. And I'm trying to build him up. And he's like, he's an automotive engineer. He said, yeah, it was for the first few days. And then I'm like, maybe I should have gotten a better, like faster. So it's already expensive.
It's already not meeting the need.
Yeah. So like teaching contentment is really good. Talking about that stuff. But honestly, about leaving them breadcrumbs about how to do this, if they have to be given this vision first, and then all that stuff makes sense. So to say you shouldn't live together, well, why? Really? If they haven't been told, because you're supposed to protect this woman, not betray her.
Hmm.
You're supposed to be her provider of security. Why won't you commit to her? Mm-hmm. Why will you just use her body and not actually commit to her? Once you've got that vision in a larger picture, the other stuff makes sense. But absent that, it's just a bunch of rules or fuddy-duddy ideas or something.
So, Brant, I appreciate so much what you're saying, and I'm feeling a little convicted here because maybe I haven't modeled this so well. Maybe I've made some bad decisions. Maybe I feed those appetites. I don't deny them enough. So how do I believably model and help a younger guy in my life to see this is the vision and it's attainable? Even though I've messed up along the way.
I think there's something really powerful about a guy who apologizes. Hmm. And it doesn't have to be a big weepy thing, but just go, you know what? I was thinking the other day, I haven't always been what I should have been. And I think it's this keeper of the garden thing, but I'm going to try to walk that out now. And I want to be a source of security for people. Now I understand that, but it's never too late to change. Hmm. I think younger guys would have a ton of respect for that. I would. I have. There's guys older than me.
No.
Yeah, they were all even older. But I had a guy, he was probably 20 years older than me, and I was talking about talking the way you talk to your wife and making her feel secure.
Hmm.
And he said at the end of this like little small group, he's like, I have had a marriage for over 40 years, and I've been a sarcastic jerk. That stops today.
I don't remember having that conversation with you. No, I mean, it's true. I mean, some of us develop this skill set, and it's just, man, it's our sword.
I know.
We whip it out so fast, we don't even know we've taken it out of the sheath.
But how awesome is it? He's like, that stops today. Like, you can still rethink. You can repent. You can change. And I don't think less of him. I'm like, dude, I have so much respect for that.
Yeah.
You're going to change, and your wife's going to benefit. She's going to get to flourish and bloom as a result of you being a better keeper of your garden. That's awesome.
Well, and you know what's fundamentally true is when we aim at something, we have a higher likelihood we're going to hit it.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
yeah,
exactly. I think the aimlessness is what most of us are feeling in a culture that doesn't give direction or gives poor direction,
right,
wrong direction. And then we in the church, I mean, we've got to do the job of lifting our young men up to say, here's the goal. And what you're seeing in these social leaders that are taking guys down a darker path of, like, true toxic masculinity, you know. We've got to get in there and arrest that and tell young men there's a better way, and it's going to connect with your heart.
Yes, exactly. That's why I'm – of course, you write a book, you're going to, like, hey, everybody, I hope you read it and like it. I'm more wound up about this than I am anything else.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, because you write about a lot of different topics.
I'm really wound up about it because I see this, and I see everyone suffering as a result of guys not knowing what their role is supposed to be, everybody. And guys feel depressed. There's the deaths of despair.
Suicide rates.
It's 3 out of 4. It's men.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know. It's very enlivening when you know what your mission is. Hmm. But you're going to feel meaningless if you're just doing meaningless stuff.
Yeah.
But that's what young guys are largely doing. I'm like, give them a better picture so that they could, oh, that's actually going to energize them.
Yeah. Well, and that's what your book does. We'll end on a high note. A funny note, it should be. This analogy you had, trying to find toilet paper during the pandemic.
It's
a funny illustration of being aimless, but go
right.
ahead.
Well, I was talking about just being ripped off, like swindled in life. But yeah, it was during COVID. There's the toilet paper shortage and all that. So we went on Amazon and I ordered at a very high rate, like $50. I can't remember, for 12 rolls of toilet paper. Like, at least we'll have some delivered to us. We get it. All 12 rolls can fit in a shoebox.
Oh, it was mini rolls.
Toilet paper for elves is what we got. And I was like, what? This is hilarious. But it's so illustrative, honestly, of how evil works in the world.
Yeah.
because you get sold something, and it turns out it drains the life out of you. It doesn't give you life.
And nobody should mess with toilet paper.
No, that's the other takeaway. And that's my next book, actually. It's called Nobody Should Mess with Toilet Paper.
Is that what it says? Yeah.
No, that's, I'm just kidding. That's not going to be the title.
I mean, that's like, you got to count on that delivery.
Yeah,
right?
You totally do. And when it showed up, we're like, no.
It's not it. Then you had to wait a month for more, right?
Exactly.
So you're out in the garden picking up leaves and things. It's crazy. Brant, you've done a great job. The Young Men We Need, God's Purpose for Every Guy and How You Can Live It Out. I mean, this is something not only us older guys need to do and embrace, but we got to model it, like you said, John. And we need to point younger men in the direction to go.
Talk about it.
Develop a mentoring group in your church, let alone talking to your own sons about what the goal is. And you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
This is a resource you should get. If you can make a gift of any amount to focus on the family, we'll send it as our way of saying thank you for your involvement in the ministry. And then you got a great resource to read and to talk about with the young men in your life. So get a hold of us. If you can make that a monthly gift, that's great. It helps the budget. Mm-hmm. If you can't afford it, we'll send it to you because we believe in the content. Like Brant said, it's something that burns at the top of his list on the important things that we need to embrace in the culture. You want to change the culture? Change the way and the goals for what men need to be about.
Mm. Yeah, get in touch with us today. Our number is 800, the letter A and the word family, 800-232-6459. Or stop by the show notes for all the details about how to donate and get a copy of this great book.
Brant, once again, well done. It's so good to see you. And thanks
for
your attitude and just the way you approach these things.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys a lot.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for joining us today for Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.
Is your marriage holding on by a thread? For deep hurt, you need deep healing that only comes from the Lord. And you'll find it at a Focus on the Family Hope Restored Intensive in Michigan. Our licensed Christian counselors will help you and your spouse get to the root of your issues in just 3 to 5 days. And it works. 80% of the couples are still married 2 years after attending. Learn more at HopeRestored.com and talk with a trusted advisor. That's HopeRestored.com.